Well, welcome, veterans, ladies and gentlemen, veterans of all ages, current active duty. Welcome to Warrior Connection again. As always, Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we're bringing information, education, training, and stuff that you can use to help you in your everyday life. Well, as we know, PTSD continues to ravish our veterans. It continues to ravish those still on active duty, and it continues to ravish the family. So let's continue our discussion on PTSD and figure out what we can do. Hey, Ray, welcome.
Hey, Doug, how are you doing?
Well, doing pretty good. We got a nice day here in Illinois today. How about out there in Carolina?
Beautiful out here, beautiful.
Yeah. Well, as we know, we continue to see a report that just came out, and we all read it, that PTSD is still affecting the Vietnam veteran. And, oh, my God, to think about that. I mean, I went over there in March of 69, came back in June of 71. You were over there, what, 68, 69, Ray?
I was there the year of 69, yeah.
Wow, a long time. Can't think about all that stuff and all the effects on everybody. Well, as we look at everything, we're looking at the PTSD. We got to come back and look at what the heck is really happening. I mean, we're learning more and more all the time about PTSD. As you guys have mentioned, and what you've ran into as you work with the troops out of Camp Lejeune in North Carolina, we got so many kids coming on active duty today that they already have what we may say is PTSD symptoms or the beginning of PTSD because of their lifestyles and what they've encountered as they're growing up. And then we couple everything together with what happens to you in the military, whether you deploy or non-deploy, and it ends up just being a nightmare, doesn't it?
Doug, I think I've got a bad connection here, but I'm listening to what you're saying, and what I feel like today is we're in a warfare. These guys coming back are messed up, but you know the ones that are coming back from Vietnam are still messed up, and we've got a lot of people out there right now needing help. So we're still trying to adjust to that.
I think one of the things that got me as I read the new report on the lingering effects of PTSD and on all the non-vets, which you and I are, both definitely are, and other friends of us are, is that in the report, one thing they said, well, everybody got sent off to war with the understanding that we were defending our nation, defending our country. Well, during World War II, yeah, hey, absolutely. I mean, you know, but Korea, Vietnam, Desert Storm, there wasn't any threat to defend against. I mean, we're looking at economic, political gain, and all this other stuff. So I can't help but think, and this is how when I reflect on it, is that whole idea of the PTSD where you're struggling in your mind and your conscience to understand what we did, what we were involved in, that we could not control, that we could not alter, that we can't change today, versus when we look back and reflect and we go, no, wait a minute. I was sold a bill of goods, and the bill of goods wasn't quite right.
That's right. We're looking at something now. We were looking at it last night. It was called mindfulness, and what the VA is trying to work with us as, and they're saying just forget about all the bad stuff and just try to remember the good stuff. And I don't remember a lot of good stuff about Vietnam, and I'm sure you don't either. There were probably good times and good friends, but there were a lot of bad circumstances, and, you know, forgetting the past, you're destined to repeat it. So you really don't want to forget the past, and you can learn from it if you allow it to, and that's what we try to get guys to do.
Yeah, I think building on the past, building on your experiences is where it's all at. I know for me personally and other ones I've been around and since you and I got connected, this building on trying to make a difference and make a change in the future and where we're at today is really the best way around all of this. I mean, we can't change what we were involved in. We can't alter the facts of what happened.
That's true.
But we can alter how we reflect on it and how we look at it and how we use that information to better our lives and better the lives of those around us, can't we?
We can. I mean, that's a good thing. And, the thing about it is, Doug, you and I didn't get here by accident. It took a lot of work, a lot of striving, a lot of, being educated in certain things. And we're here today, not by accident, so we can pass that on to the young ones today that you can make it, but you're going to have to put a little bit of yourself into it, and you're not going to have to rely on people and government and different people to, wean you along, because they'll tell you that you're messed up and you need help and you can't do anything in life. But you can, but you're going to have to apply yourself. And what we're trying to do now is, through the book I've written and also a brochure we've written, is to try and to get to every veteran we can and give them some hope about, it's about you. What do you want to do with life? And just forget about what they're trying to do to you many times. You come back and you tell them you've got a little depression or something, they put you on some kind of psychotropic drug to try to help you out. But what it does, it kind of shoots you in the foot. It just makes you where you can't do much but rely on them. And what we're trying to get them to do is to make a conscious decision. We ask them the first question when we do a therapy session with these guys, and I do it all the time. I ask them one basic question: do you want to get better, or do you want to stay like you are? And it's amazing how many that say, I want to get better. And we have something to work with then, Doug. So it's really, it starts out with making a conscious decision of, I'm not going to be satisfied going through life as a wounded warrior. I know it is what it is, but I don't have to be stuck there the rest of my life. And we are making positive changes with these guys, and I see it all the time.
I think that's real important. I mean, we look at World War II, and our dads were in World War II, and our older cousins, maybe older brother or whatever we have, or sister was involved in Korea, and then we went to Vietnam, and some of us went to Vietnam and Desert Storm, and there's even guys that went to Vietnam, Desert Storm, and OIF.
Right.
But one thing that's all the way through there, and it came about after World War II, is the GI Bill, and there's, different iterations today. But I know, and for everybody, once you've been in the military, you have that educational benefit to come back out. And if you want to go into the trades, you can get the vocational training. Or if you want to go into academia and the professions, you can get that college education and training. But you have to make the conscious decision that you're going to do it. Now, granted, it's friggin' difficult and a half when you've got physiological medical problems.
Right.
Or you've got PTSD problems. But when you have put the mind onto focusing something else and make the determination that you're going to get through, you can get that vocational training, get that academic education, and you can succeed in any life and any career that you make a conscious choice to do, can't you?
Well, I truly believe you can. And you know, if you look at your life, Doug, you were in Vietnam, and then you were in Gulf War, and then you were in other things after that. And I was in Vietnam. I was up on the DMZ, and it was a different, a little bit different type of war. But I think both of us experienced traumas. I had multiple traumas many times. My platoon was wiped out. I ended up playing dead at one particular time. Just a lot of different trauma. But when they read my book, and I did chronicle a lot of those traumas that I experienced in 1969, but what the message I try to give them is, it didn't absolutely totally ruin my life. I went through a period of time where I went to alcohol and drugs, trying to kind of snuff it or trying to not feel it. But I came to my senses, and I just said, I'm not going to do this anymore. I was in a bar one night, matter of fact, and I was drinking, and I drank a lot during those days. And I got looking around me at the people I was hanging around, and I thought, what am I doing here? I don't even like these people. And so I put the beer down, and I walked out. I went from a total alcoholic to total sobriety by making one choice. Now, I know not everybody can do that, but most people can if they come to the realization that that alcohol, whatever, is destroying their life. It's bad enough when you have all these symptoms of depression and anxiety and things that are happening, and you do have to learn what is causing that and how to neutralize it. But you can't allow your past to determine the rest of your life, determine your future. You have some say-so in what you do. I think it was Dr. Phil said one time that the only difference between me and the people that I admire are the choices I make. And I know we all have different levels of education or maybe abilities or things like that. But still, you can make some choices to where you do take advantage of some of those things you were just talking about. Or you can stay like you are and just mediocre or even low poverty or whatever you want to do. But you can make choices to change that.
You know, one of the things, again, I mean, when we came back, I know when I came back to Vietnam and I went right back to school immediately, I mean, I started my undergraduate work immediately afterwards, so I had to get engrossed in my academics. Now, you know, along with that, you had to study and everything else. And, yeah, we did take some time to go out there and do the drinking, but after a while it got to a point, why did we even need to do this?
Right.
And then
right.
And when I got the opportunity to start graduate school, to work my master's and onto my PhD, I realized, and wait a minute, I got to get ready to go drinking, then I got to go drinking, then I got to recover from drinking, and then I got ready to get ready to go back and do what I was going to do before I started to do this whole thing,
yeah.
And the only thing I did was pay to pee.
That's exactly right.
and the realization is, I don't need this. I mean, granted, there's all of us have problems in our life, and all of us need help, all of us have to talk about it, have to deal with it. But to me, the alcohol and the drugs and all this stuff, I mean, it just didn't make any sense whatsoever to kind of complicate everything else that you had on top of it.
Well, the VA is trying to help us, and I know the military does too, but when these guys come back, they probably have certain emotional problems. I mean, if you've been around trauma, you've been traumatized, you're going to have something that you bring out of that. And it does be on your mind, and you might see some things that remind you of it. And so it is all – and, you know, what we try to explain to these guys, it takes 30 minutes per person to sit down and just talk to them. What Johnny Brunda and myself did, we decided, because both of us are combat veterans, we decided let's make up a brochure that we can put in their hands, and it will talk to them in their own private time. And so we created this brochure about life after trauma. And – what it does, it explains what trauma is, explains what post-traumatic stress is. And, Doug, I'm not a doctor. I wish I was, but I'm not. And so I am a patient, though, and I understand things from a patient's perspective. And a little bit less complicated, but I think we end up on the same page. And what we tried to do was put something in their hands so they could understand what post-traumatic stress really is. And you can look at all the things that it causes, all the hypertension, anger, anxiety, all these things. And basically what it is, it's an adrenaline pump. When you were in trauma, your brain produced adrenaline to get you out of it. Later in life, something will remind you of that trauma. Your brain doesn't know the difference between reality and fantasy many times. And so it starts producing adrenaline. That adrenaline pump, when there's no real use of it, or you're not really in a trauma, you're just in a memory of it, what it does, it turns into a panic attack. You have all the classic signs of an anxiety or a panic attack. What you have to do is you have to identify what the problem is with you. If you're having those panic attacks from period to period, you have to say, okay, well, how do I neutralize this panic attack? How do I stop this thing? And we give them tools to do that. And in this brochure, it identifies it. It says if you think you might have post-traumatic stress, then this is what you do. And so we start going through a few questions, and we just ask them, you know, question, do you want to get better? Yes, I want to get better. Are you doing anything that contributes to the anxiety, the depression, the hypertension? Are you doing anything like in substance that causes you problems? If you're drinking on the way home from work one night, or say often, and when you get home, your wife is mad and she's hot and you've got a lot of problems going on there, you could do something about the problem. You could stop it off, for instance. And what we tell them is basically, it comes out of the Bible really, but it says, where there is no wood, the fire goes out. In other words, if you remove the fuel away from the flame, the fire goes down and goes out. If certain things in life, we're having all these problems, but there may be things that we can remove away from the problem, and the problem will subside, at least somewhat. We get to a certain point that we get these guys, and we tell them, yesterday is where that trauma is. Yesterday is where you saw things, experienced things, maybe bad things happened to you. It could have been combat, or it could have been being in a war zone, or it could have been being molested. It could have been somebody hurting you, and all of it has to do with trauma. Well, those triggers will keep coming back. You can't get rid of them, so you have to find out ways to neutralize them. And what we try to tell them to do is you have to draw a line in the sand between yesterday, where that trauma was, and today. Today is the first day of the rest of your life. Where do you want to be in 10 years from now? The wall that was in front of you yesterday of trauma and hurt and pain is now behind you. Now there's nothing to stop you, Doug. You can go forward. You can go back to college. You can go to community college. You can go learn a trade. You can do anything you want to. Where do you want to be in 10 years? And I've had Marines and sailors and soldiers tell me, and airmen too, tell me that they wanted to be a mechanic. And I said, mechanic? Why not have your own garage? It was like, wow, never thought about it. One guy says, I love computers. Well, I'd love to be an analyst. And I said, why not? You start on it today. I had one guy tell me he wanted to be a doctor. It's like, get started on it today, because don't let your past determine your future. And it's making a true difference in their lives, because it's freeing them up, Doug. I don't know how they missed it, but a lot of guys missed the idea of what you just said about going back to college or getting a degree or going on forward. And if you had allowed yourself to hang out with your buddies and get drunk every night, you wouldn't have been where you are right now. You would have been somewhere else.
I mean, it's completely, different. I made that conscious choice not to hang around with that crowd.
Oh, it is.
And I don't miss it, but at the same time, I miss it. I mean, you know, you became a part of a group and part of a cohort group.
Right.
But when that
right.
cohort group or that group ended up just continuing on a destructive path, for me, it just didn't make any sense.
Well, that's true.
It's going back into academia, and it's very, very important. You need to go back to a regular university or a regular college or a regular trade school, not a fly-by-night one or one of these things where you're trying to do it self-paced on the computer by yourself, because you're not going to get the quality and the academic education that you're going to need that you're going to get by sitting in a classroom, sitting in a laboratory with one-on-one, and as the instructor explains it. And then if you run into a problem where you don't understand it, they can explain it to you in multiple ways because they have the knowledge thereof.
That's true.
If you're sitting trying to explain and understand something and you've got no way to relate to it, all you're doing is just wasting your time. And I think people get flustered on that.
Well, I've read a lot of things about post-traumatic stress, and it's what I talk to these guys about, that I'm always looking and feeling and studying and trying to be aware of what's going on. And some of what I've read is about, because we were in the military, there was a lot of camaraderie. We had close friends. We were protecting each other. There was a degree of security there. There was all these things that we crave even as children, and we grew up like that. Well, today we still crave that. We want some kind of camaraderie. If you're going to go to school, you have to hang around people with a like-minded goal. If you don't, they will distract you from your goal. And we tell them to choose your friends wisely, because you'll probably end up like the people you're hanging around. If you're going to school and you're hanging around with a bunch of guys in a science class, at night you're going to be talking to each other. You're going to be taking tests together. You're going to be working on pre-test and everything together. And so you've got this camaraderie that we need, but it's positive camaraderie. And so that's one of the parts that we try to do. Choose your friends wisely, because you'll probably end up like the people you hang around. And that's a good positive thing to think about. We tell them, strive to be the best person, the best friend, the best parent, the best, husband or wife, whatever, that you can possibly be. You could actually be Uncle Jim that everybody says they want their kids like. And everybody's telling you, Doug, that you can't. They're saying you're wounded. You can't. You've got this wound in your brain, and you got this mental illness, and you're never going to be right again. And that's a lie. That's something that there was an elephant one time with a small chain in a circus, and the guy was looking at him, and he asked the trainer, he said, why don't the elephant break the chain? He said, well, we put that chain on him when he was a baby, and he pulled and tugged and jerked at it, and he couldn't break it, and he gave up on it. Now he's so big, he could snap it, but he doesn't know it, so he doesn't break it. And that's where a lot of people have bought into that thing of saying, well, you are what you are, and you'll never be anything other than that. And war does not change that. We're going to live with the fact, but we can be proud of what we did in the military. But we don't have to walk around life wounded from there on out. We can be what God created us to be, or what we wanted to be in life, or whatever it is. And so we have to get a whole new mindset of saying, look, the first day of my life, the rest of my life, it starts out with me getting a positive goal, focusing on that goal, You know, they say when you focus on something that you become so focused on it, you can't see anything else around you. Well, that's what you have to do if you want a goal, because everybody around you is going to be trying to stop you from doing it. They're going to say, hey, Doug, let's go party tonight. Let's go out and the girls and all the stuff. And you'll be going, I got to study, man. I got a test coming up. Oh, man, come on. So, you know, they're trying to drag you out. But it's like you said, you go out, you got to get ready. You go out, you get drunk or whatever. You meet people. You're out until 4 o'clock in the morning. You get home. You got to go to work. You got to do this. It just does not make sense, and it doesn't work real well. You can go to ECU, which is a college near my house, and it's a great college. You can get a great degree, or you can go to a party school like ECU, and you come out of there 4 years later with mediocre this, and maybe if you do make it 4 years, because it is number one party school from what I understand. So you have a choice to make with your life. And it can begin a long time ago, or you might have to come out of military and make that choice. But you're going to have to make it sometime or another. And when you get down to the end of the road, you'll want to look back and say, man, why didn't I do things different? What was I thinking? And it's a great program, Doug, that we're using. And I've heard instructors, therapists, and different ones tell me later, they said, I could see their faces change when you talk to them because they got hope. One of the things we tell them to do, too, Doug, one of the last things we tell them, is I tell them that the best home improvement you can do is take your family to church. And they say, well, why? Now you're going to preach to me. No. I tell them that most good people in, say, New Bern or wherever you live, they gather or they congregate on Sunday mornings at a church. Well, that's a good place to hang around because there's a lot of good people there. Now, there's a lot of bad people, too, but you got to be careful. But that's where good people congregate. So who would you want your wife to hang around? Who would your wife want you to hang around? Who do you want your kids hanging around? You have to make better choices and fewer regrets. And going to church, it would be a good place to start as far as hanging around better people. I tell them, I said they have good food, they have good fellowship, they have good teaching on moral and character, and you get to worship God. That's pretty cool.
Now, you know, all that's real important. In addition to that, I mean, you've got all your community organizations. I mean, obviously, everybody community's got a library. I know I'm very involved in our local community library, and they're always looking for volunteers and individual knowledge and experience. You can get involved in that. Community theater, which people can get involved in. If you've got a local museum or something like that, you're going to get involved in it. A whole bunch of civic organizations and various clubs and organizations that are out there.
Oh, there are.
Not to have a party where you come to the place and go sit and drink and play cards,
right.
But you're making an active choice and you're involved in actually improving the life of a child or a family or something. So, I mean,
that's
if
true.
You get involved in this, it gives you a total fulfillment of feeling really good and seeing something achieved. I mean, if you can help one person alone, that one person that can make a world difference in the world.
It can, and that's how we start, one person at a time. The way this started out, Doug, you know, after I'd written the book and all, but Johnny Brunden and I were talking one day about trying to get help to more veterans and what we could talk to, and the way we did it was create a brochure. But I was telling him that I got lost in the woods several years ago. I didn't really go hunting that day. I went out in the woods just to kind of look for some deer signs so I could go hunting. But when I was out there, I got all turned around. There was a lot of leaves on the ground, and all of a sudden I got turned around, and I was found myself absolutely lost. I had no sense of direction. I couldn't. I was hopeless, really. And I found myself plowing through the briars and the bushes trying to find my way out of this place. And realizing I was out of control, I made myself stop. And I just thought, calm down. You've got to calm down. You're not thinking right. So I began to breathe real deeply, close my eyes, and I stood there until I calmed down about a minute or so later. And I thought, now how am I going to get out of these woods? It's going to be dark in a couple of hours, and I got to get out of here. And the thought came to me, well, there's deer out here, and those deer use trails to go back and forth to the bean fields. So just go through the woods, it doesn't matter what direction you go in, and look for a deer trail. And that's what I did. And later on, I came across a little deer trail. I got on it and walked it out to a bean field. And that's when I came out of the woods. Well, what we tell these veterans today is, I've been lost in those dark woods of post-traumatic stress just like you have and just like you are. But I found a trail. And if you'll follow us, we'll lead you out of this thing. So we're going back in, and we're finding all the veterans we can and we're trying to lead them out too. And it is working, Doug. It really is.
You know, when I look at the PTSD and we tie together with the physiological illnesses, you got pain management. Obviously, you know, when your body's in pain and you have to take pain meds and everything, obviously you have to control the pain, but you need to work with your doctor and take those that are necessary and not go taking the alcohol and self-meds and everything else that create a problem. But I think one of the big struggles and the big problems, I think, with the PTSD, and you've reached this in your book and you've talked about this now today, is that religious aspect. I mean, within the VA, granted, there's only about 1,000 trained chaplains within the entire VA. But right. You do have your community pastor, your parish priest, whatever you have, whatever religion you are, and they do have education and training to help you. And sometimes just sitting down and what I've done, having a conversation with the chaplain, can alleviate so many problems so fast and make your head spin.
It does.
Because they're focusing on the soul and on the moral aspect of it rather than saying, well, hey, I'll offer you this drug or something to deal with it, because a doctor doesn't want to take the time in the mental health clinic, take the time to understand what caused the problem, to address that deep-seated, deep down, deep in the soul problem that the event caused the trauma. While the chaplain, he's sitting there looking, okay, how do I get you healed to move on and move forward? I mean, which doctor do we need? Well, obviously, we need both of them, but one can do more good than the other, I'm beginning to think.
Well, I know for a fact that when you go into combat, I talked about it in my book, about I was 19 years old. I was raised in church, but I wasn't, I never made a commitment to God or anything. But I had been raised in church. So I knew some rights and wrongs and different things, but when you go into combat, you have to shelf all that stuff. When you're dealing with an enemy soldier that's looking to kill you, you have to put all that, you can't think about it anymore. You have to become as complacent as a corner butcher. That's what I put in my book. You have to develop a mental hardness that allows you to fight and kill your enemy. That's a hard thing, especially for Americans to understand. But, that's what you have to do. You don't realize it, but you're causing moral injury. And if you have been molested, for instance, it doesn't really matter what the trauma you experienced. That the trauma you experienced could have caused some kind of a moral injury that just whacked you, and you didn't understand it maybe, but you feel dirty, and you feel ashamed, and you feel hurt, and you feel disgraced, and you come back home. And coming back home from Vietnam didn't help a lot of matters, because a lot of people made us feel that way. And so we felt that way anyway. And the way I explain it to them, Doug, is that I tell them, if you have a brand new car and that car has a noise in it that is driving you crazy, but you can't find it. You've looked everywhere. You've tried to eliminate everything. So you take it back and forth to the dealership, and they look at it, and they check it, and they can't do anything with it. Well, then what do? You got a new car. It's got a noise in it. You can't fix it. So what they do is they take it to the factory. The factory will either fix it or replace it. They built that car. They know what it makes, what makes it run. They know how everything functions in that car. And if they have to, they'll tear it all to pieces. They did that in the 60s. A guy was having a problem with the car, had a noise in it, and they finally took it to the factory. When they tore the car all to pieces, they found out somebody had put a drink bottle inside the frame, and it was rattling, and that's what was causing it. And so that's what happens when you have that problem. You take it to the factory. Well, what we tell them is that you've got a conscience inside of you. You were born with it, and it's basically God's law inside of you. I don't care where you go in this world, people know not to lie, not to steal, not to cheat, not commit adultery. They're just natural laws of the conscience. And when you do certain things to injure that conscience, I don't think the VA can really fix it. I don't think therapists can fix it. I don't think rubbing your head will fix it. I think sometime or another, you're going to have to go back to the factory, back to God, and say, God, help me. I don't even know if you're a real or alive, but if you are, help me. And that's what we tell them about moral injury. It's a very simplified form of it. There's a whole lot of, different aspects of it. But the basic form of that is, at some point in your life, if you want to get better, you're going to have to get that fixed. And people tell me from reading my book that they have gotten fixed. They said, I realized that there was part of me that couldn't be medicated and it couldn't go through therapy. It had to be fixed by whoever created this thing. And so it's kind of strange, Doug, but it's been a great aspect of it that I've enjoyed hearing the testimonies from it. People can go to my website, Doug. It's www.theneverendingwar.com. It's under L.M. Clark, which is my wife, actually, and she helped me to produce this book and all. But you can go on the website and look on the home page and scroll down. You'll see PTSD brochure. You'll learn all about the book, and also you can get a copy of that brochure for yourself. If you want an expanded version of that, you go to the top of the website and it says more. You scroll down. You look for discussions on PTSD, and it'll have an expanded version of that. And you can actually make copies and give them to people. They're free. And you can watch what happens. It gives them light and hope that they never had before. And I think it's working, Doug. More than
I think when I look at your brochure here in what PTSD, we've defined that, and coping, and again, you may not be able to get over PTSD, but you can learn to cope with the symptoms.
You can.
You don't have to let it rule your life. You can learn how to neutralize the effects of the adrenaline before they destroy you. So, and again, you got some very simple coping techniques that are in here. I mean, number one is stop. Get still.
Yeah.
I mean, you know. I mean, when things are coming spinning unglued, and they will happen no matter what, and it's going to happen for the rest of our life, it will happen. We need to understand that it will happen.
It will.
You just got to sit down and, you know, close your eyes or get in a safe place and cuddle up under the covers or whatever you need to do, but stop and
take
a fresh
breath
of air, I guess.
Breathe deeply. Maybe use a nasal inhaler to open up your sinuses so you get some oxygen to your brain. And that's one of the coping skills. And once you calm down, then you can think clearly and think, now, how, you know, what caused this? How do I avoid this particular thing again? One of the things that always bothered me throughout all these years, 45 years, is the wind blowing. I never knew why, but I knew it unnerved me all the time. Well, the fact of the matter is that the enemy is hard to be seen in a jungle on a windy day. Well, that's obvious. So the wind possibly caused my nerves to go back and kind of be frayed from that. The other thing is the VA was telling me that because combat is so chaotic, and I'm sure flying in B-52s is very chaotic, but when the wind is blowing, everything around me is moving. The grass, the leaves, the trees, anything blowing on the ground. And my brain picks up on the chaotic state of it. And that's what causes my adrenaline to start pumping. And when my adrenaline starts pumping, then I go into a panic attack. So I have to use a nasal inhaler with me all the time. You can buy those at Walmart and different places. You can also take a little bit of vapor rub that is made of menthol, put it right on your nostrils. You begin to open your sinuses up. You begin to get a little shot of oxygen to your brain. And then you just learn how. One of the things we tell them in this brochure is we know you're going to isolate because that's one of the common things that all of us do. When we start having a panic attack, we will isolate from everybody. So we tell them, I know you're going to do this, so do not take with you certain things, drugs, alcohol, weapons, pornography, those type of things, because they are stimulants within their cells, but they're negative stimulants. So then we tell them what to carry with them. You carry something to drink like water or a non-caffeinated beverage. You take something light to eat. You take some soft music. You take something good to read, something positive, something that is maybe pro-life or pro-family or pro-whatever, not pro-life necessarily, but pro-family, just pro-everything. And it will help you to calm down, reset, and you'll be able to walk away from it and go back into whatever you wanted to do. But what you have to do is just stop, realize you're in a problem, do something about it, and then restart yourself. If you don't, you'll just become victimized by that. And, Doug, they have me, you know, the VA is wonderful in so many, many things, but so many times they over-medicate. They had me on hydrocodone. They had me on 8 hydrocodone a day, along with lorazepam, along with Zoloft, along with Seroquel, just all these pills. And I was being highly influenced by those pills. And I came to my realization one day of thinking, I got to do something about this. I can't live like this. And so I had to start. I worked with a doctor, too, that helped me to begin to come back. If 8 hydrocodone a day will work, well, maybe 6 will. So you go to 6. And then sometime later, months later, maybe you go to 4. And maybe you go to 2. And so what you have to do is take responsibility of saying, I think I need to work on these things and get it fixed, because what is taking place right now is I'm not getting better. I'm just being medicated so I don't feel it. And, you know, that causes problems for families. The Vietnam veterans have a 94%, or that's what I've read, divorce rate. The Gulf War veterans have a close to 90% divorce rate. I don't know what it is today with today's military and reserves and such, but I'm sure it's high. Because if you have a guy in the family that's having problems and he's medicated all the time, and they may be drinking on top of it, he is creating a lot of problems in that family. And they cannot sustain that type of family, injuries. So we're trying to get to them, Doug. And it's a warfare, we realize it is, and we're losing it for the most part. The DOD told us recently that they believe they're losing about 100 a day from the veterans, the military, the active duty military, and reserves to suicide, 100 a day throughout the world. And so we're losing them, and maybe this will help stop it.
I think the frustration of all of that, the numbers that are committing to suicide, because it's definitely hit us home personally, all of us.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
These individuals, when you read what they said before and what they wrote or said, listen to them right before they gave up, they lost all hope. They lost any dream. Yeah. They lost any idea of moving forward or what they could do. I mean, they have physiological medical problems that weren't addressed. We're trying to get those addressed. It's still a problem. It always will be. And then they have all the spousal and family problems that they might have come into this thing with before.
Right.
They might have got married real young just as an escape out of this stuff without any of the coping skills or ability to deal with the reality of family life. And then they don't have an adequate training or education for a job. And that doesn't mean they can't get it, because they obviously can if they make the conscious choice to do it, ask for help, and, you know, knuckle down. I guess it's just perseverance that all it is.
Right, right.
But they get into a situation where there's no way out.
When do you make a conscious decision to say, look, I'm changing this trend that I'm in? I know that I'm heading downhill, and I know that I've never done. Maybe you barely made it through high school, and you've never thought about going back to school. Maybe you wanted to have a menial job somewhere or go to work for the government or whatever. But that's not panning out, because now you've got a record of being just you're depressed and you're on medication. So that's going to hinder you. And a lot of these young people almost see it like a wall in front of them that has been built out of dysfunction, out of trauma, out of drugs, pharmaceutical drugs, out of a lot of things. And now you've got a record, and your future employers will look at that record and say, I don't think so. So what do? You just hide behind the wall, or do you step around the wall and walk away from that wall? And we're trying to give them, you know, practical solutions of how you can move that from behind the wall to in front of the wall. And you begin today by saying, I'm going to do something differently. I'm going to get my head together. I'm going to get this thing fixed, and I'm going to move forward. I'm going to go back to school. In 10 years, I'd like to be somewhere. And I don't want to be where I'm standing either. And so, you know, it's working, and I don't know what else out there is working. Doug, I've seen every kind of therapy you can imagine. I've seen garden therapy and coloring book therapy and horse therapy and dog therapy. Well, they're good things, but they're not fixing the problem. And I know as a veteran with post-traumatic stress, I have what they consider severe post-traumatic stress. When you read the book, and I'm, you know, I was certainly not anybody who did anything special. I was with a bunch of grunts out on the DMZ, and we were in some pretty heavy stuff. But I myself had some pretty exciting times, too. I don't know how I worked that out. Not everybody had to play dead at a certain time. I fell into a punji pit one time, and the only thing that they hadn't finished on this punji pit, they hadn't put the sticks in the bottom. It had just been freshly dug, and myself and another Marine fell into the thing. And just time after time after time, trauma happened. But you can't let that ruin your life. I pretty much did. I'll be honest with you. I was stunted. And I went through drugs and alcohol, and then I got jobs. And sometimes I worked three jobs, Doug. And it was like, but I never quit. I pushed on and pushed on and pushed on and pushed on until things started getting better and things started moving. I began to do things positive and started working, and God helped change my life. And so what I'm looking back at, and I'm telling these guys, don't do like I did. You're young, and you can start out now where I can't. But what I need to do is tell them that there are some positive things, and you know, talk to people like you who took another path. You know, the only difference between me and you, Doug, are the choices I made and the choices you made. That's a pretty startling thing. And why not get young people to look at you and say, make his choices. Go where he's been. Who knows? Maybe he'll be a doctor one day, or she.
And you know, one thing that needs, and when I got into academia, I found out, and you have to dedicate yourself, and all of this comes into play. Yeah, you have physiological problems. Yes, you have memory problems and learning problems as a result of your physical injuries.
Sure.
But all those things you can adapt and work around. I know when I was a professor for a short time, and I was teaching right at a military base, and I had a lot of military, and I had to modify and adjust my teaching and my testing to meet the needs of that student. But I think
right.
Every professor will do that if they understand what's happening.
Right.
And again, it's just making the dedication. I mean, people can achieve greatness and do anything if they make the conscious choice to do it, make the dedication and the commitment to follow through, hold the perseverance to get through with it, and ask for help that they need and accept the help that's out there. I mean, you can do anything and everything if you make those choices. And then, like you say, I can't overemphasize enough. I mean, dealing and who you spend your time with makes a big, big difference. If you're hanging around with a bunch of vets, but all they're doing is sitting there and shooting the bull and talking about the stories and drinking booze or popping drugs or doing something else, you ain't going to go forward.
You're not. And you know, we teach martial arts. I am a master in martial arts, about the only master I've ever been from. My wife won't even call me master, actually. But I told her she had a problem with that, and she said she really did. She wasn't going to call me master. But, you know, that's the only master I've ever been, but I've taught a lot of students how to adapt, improvise, and overcome. And sometimes you can't get over the wall, but I'll guarantee you can get around the wall, you can go under the wall, you can do something. And, you know, it's not how big the dog is in the fight, it's how big the fight is in the dog. And they will, if a veteran is up against this wall right now, and he can't see around that wall, and that wall is going to hinder him the rest of his life. He's on medications. He may be being put out of the military because of it, because he's having a lot of emotional problems. And it might have been combat, or it might not have been combat. It might have been a different type of combat, growing up in a dysfunctional home and things like that that come back on you. But if he's there today or she's there today and that wall's in front of them, Doug, and they're standing there and they can't see nothing but wall in front of them that's going to really cause them to be lame the rest of their life, what they have to do is draw that metaphoric line in the sand between yesterday where that wall is and today and step forward and into the day and say, look, it's about me. From here on, I'm going to make some better decisions. I'm going to make some decisions that's going to alter my future. And if you're married, you get your wife to help you out or your husband to help you out in this thing. If you've got children, you get the children to help you out. You say, yeah, I've got some problems. I drink. Well, attack it like a family. Get in there and start working on it. Get some alternatives. You know, we tell a lot of people married, we tell them that a good marriage is not a 50-50 marriage. It's 100% and 100%, and it equals 100%. And that's the only way you're going to end up not being on that list of 94% or 90% divorce rate. I think in America today it's like 60% with just civilians. So, yeah, it's easy to become a part of that. And I think most of us veterans, probably from Vietnam, probably most of us probably fell into that. But it's because we made a lot of bad choices. What we do is we learn from those choices and start making better choices. And we don't tell these young kids about, hey, go ahead, everybody's got to do their own thing and you got to learn the hard way. There's two ways to learn. You can learn from somebody else's experiences, or you can learn from your own. But if you learn from somebody else's, it hurts a whole lot less, and you can move forward a whole lot quicker. So that's what we tell them to do all the time, Doug, is it's about you. What do you want to do? Forget what they said. What do you want to do? And if you find out you're over your head in something and you want to be a brain surgeon and you start jumping out there, you may have to change, whatever you're trying to seek for in college or whatever you're trying to seek for in life, whatever you're doing, you may have to go a different direction. But you can find something to achieve by. And, because not everybody's going to be a brain surgeon. If they did, not much need of brain surgeons. But there's a lot of other things we can do. And these veterans, I tell you, Doug, they fought for their countries. They paid a high price, and now they're suffering because of it. And there's two ways to die for your country. You can give your life for your country in death, or you can live for a higher purpose. And the people that we saw die around us, wouldn't it be wonderful if they could look at us living a good life? I mean, that's what we died for. They died for anyway. And so there's a lot of reasons to move forward. And I see veterans all the time just hanging on by the skin of their teeth, as it were. But they don't have to do that. You can actually move forward and do something with your life. Just like you talk about hanging around a library all day. Yeah, you're going to hang around. You're going to meet some people that are very educated, that love to read. Who knows? You may start reading. You might start traveling through your mind. You might start making progress in somewhere else. And, it could be a good deal. So do something. Do something.
There's one of the things, another alternative therapy, and again, their reports are coming out now that it's working, is mindfulness.
Right.
Again, this is living for the moment or living for the present. I mean, the past happened. We can't change it. We have to use the lessons learned to make it better in the future.
That's right. That's right.
But we're living for at the present and thinking about the present and where we are and what we need to do and not letting our actions be dictated by the past.
That's true. That's true. Because, there's an old Oriental saying that says, if you forget your past, you're destined to repeat it. But if you dwell on your past, it will rob your future. And that's where people get caught up. They begin to dwell on their past. They have hatred and bitterness for the people that hurt them and for the things that hurt them and destroyed them. And you become, I remember one time, they said it was a church thing, but this pastor visited an old lady in the church that was always putting everybody down, talking about them, everything in the world. And she was telling about her next-door neighbor. She never cleaned her clothes like she should, never washed them like they should. They were always dingy and dirty. And she said, look out there, look on the line out the window. It said, you see all those dirty, dingy clothes out there on her clothesline. And said, the pastor looked out there, and he looked and said, sure enough, they were yellow and dingy and dirty. But he said he looked again, he took his handkerchief, and he wiped the window, and said all of a sudden the clothes were sparkling white. It wasn't the clothes that were dirty, it was the woman's glasses. And sometimes in life, we look at everything like it's dirty and rank and dingy and filthy. It could be us. We may be looking through dark glasses. And so we need to get our eyes cleaned up, and we need to get our focus on what can I do to help things. And we just move forward. How do we do that? So we learn from other people a lot of times, and that's what I tell them all the time. So I don't know what else to tell them, Doug. I would if I knew something else worked, I'd tell them. But this is what I do know does work.
Yeah, I think it's just a big difference. I mean, the key things here, and kind of sum it up here in the last few minutes. Number one, yeah, we were in the military. Whatever happened there happened.
Right.
But you now have the opportunity, based on the fact that you were in the military, even still current in the military, to go and get your education that you need, the training you need for a job. Yes,
yeah.
Granted, it's going to be extremely difficult. You're going to have to make a dedication to do it, but there you get that education and training, and now you have an opportunity where the door opens to where you can get a job and improve your lifestyle and provide the support for your family or your loved ones.
Right.
But along that same way, and I think this is the key thing, and I can't overemphasize this enough, alcohol doesn't solve a darn thing. The only thing is it numbs it for a few minutes and creates a nightmare.
Exactly.
I mean, nicotine, caffeine, all of these things, these drugs all make you feel good for a few minutes, but they don't resolve or solve anything at all. And all they do is create a problem because, you know, while you're using that stuff, you're on hold. You're kind of like in limbo. You're sitting there hovering, going no place.
That's right. That's right. And you're really, your life is spiraling out of control around you. I met a young soldier at McDonald's a little while back, and we got to talking, and he was going to college. He came back. He got out of the Army. He started going to college. He was in the first semester, and he was talking about, I'm trying to get my life. And so I went through this brochure with him, Doug, and I know he's on the right track and everything is working well. But, you know, I told him some things about choosing your friends wisely and about how to make some better choices and fewer regrets. And when I finished up, he said, you know what? He said, I feel like I was on a good path. He said, but you changed my life today. And what it was, I gave him a little bit of information of saying, yeah, you're going to school now. You're moving forward, and that's wonderful. But who you hang around has got a lot to do with who you become. And they can hinder you or they can propel you in. And so you have to choose your friends wisely. You have to make better choices. And that has a lot to do with the future of these young men and women. I hate to see them coming back from war after giving their everything they had in the military, and now they're cutting out on us and dying. And some of them are dying in the military now because they're on medications and they are drinking. They allow them to drink in the barracks now. You can, if you're 21 years old, you can have a six-pack every night in your room. And if you go on medications, you're playing with a very deadly substance there, a cocktail more or less. And it's just a lot of negatives, and you're going to have to fight for your future if you want a good future. And they can start right today doing that, just making the first choice of, I'm going to make some better choices on this thing.
And one of the other problems that runs into it is you choose your friends and everybody, or if you run out of other veterans, and I've known this myself. When I'll start talking about something that happened or bring up the documentation of something that happened or to verify this is what occurred and this is what the consequences are, I've ran into the problem with the other veteran that was close to you. They only, not only some of them, they don't want to hear it, they don't want to know, and they don't want to go back and think about it.
Yeah.
To try and deal with the hardcore reality of what really did transpire and what were the consequences thereof.
Right.
And there at that same time, you're part of this whole group, this cohort group, and as all of a sudden you've broken away from this cohort group, and now you might be out there by yourself where, okay, I don't really have anybody to sit with or talk with or run with because the other ones that were in my immediate circle were still hung up and locked into this thing, and I'm walking away.
That's true.
I mean, that is, it makes it for a very lonely existence that, again, can catapult all these other problems.
And that's very difficult because we've been so insulated around from people around us in the military. But what it comes down to, Doug, is do you want to be a leader or a follower? Are you going to follow them, or are you going to lead and be a pathfinder to a better? Some of those guys will see what you're doing and probably follow you, too. And you never know the influence you have on people. You'll never see it, probably. But if you could just look 50 years down the road and see where people are, you might realize that you made a difference. You know, they said that a tall oak is nothing but it used to be a little nut that held his ground. And that makes a lot of sense when you think about it. You look at a tall oak today, and he looks mighty stout. But at one time, he was just a little nut that held his own ground. And if we'll hold our ground and do what's right, then we'll, no telling how many people we can influence with that. You know, we talked recently about people that say, well, you know, a few beers is okay, a few drinks, a few okay. Well, it may be for you, but the people you're hanging around, it may not be. For the children that watch you, for the family that watches you and participates with you, they might not be able to stop when you stop. So it's just a matter of making a good example out of yourself. And you know, sometimes we have to walk alone. That's all it is to it. And does that stop you from moving, Doug? No. You did it anyway, right? And people will rally around you before it's over with. So just that's all that I could recommend to them was, I know it's going to hurt a little bit. I know it's going to be lonely, but just hang in there. And, you know, you make new friends. That's what it is. When you start doing different things and hang around different places, you make new friends. you hang around a library, yeah, it's quiet, but still people hang around each other. And so don't be too worried about that.
All this stuff seems to be such simple common sense, but I think when I'm looking at it, look back at the stuff, from Vietnam onward, all of us were sent as individual replacements for the most part.
Right.
And within 20, you'd leave the States, and 24 hours later, you're in combat, and then you're getting ready to go home, and 24 hours later after your last mission, you're sitting back home.
That's right.
I mean, for me at that time, and I wasn't, had barely shaved, and I had my diapers changed. I mean, that was just such a strange feeling. I mean, recently, I was back home a few weeks ago, and I talked with guys that were there when I came home and everything, and how they felt. They hadn't gone, and what was sealing, and how we've all changed, and how we've progressed, and where we've gone in life. And it's just kind of like, oh, my.
Yeah.
Where did time go, and what did we do, and what happened?
Right, right. Well, you know, when you said something a minute ago about simple, simplicity is really what is freedom from complexity. And everything is so complex, and everything, the mental issues of today are so complex. But we have to look for simple solutions sometimes, because, you know, the difference between children and adults are so complex. They're educated, they've been experienced, everything, and they're complex. Little children see things differently sometimes, and they can see through all the complexity of it. And I think that's a good thing for us to do sometimes, to back away and look at it. Just like I did in those woods that day when I was lost, I had to calm down and think, how am I getting out of this place? Because I had no earthly idea. And once all the complexity moved out of the way, then that little simple thought was, well, there's deer out here, and they go back and forth to bean fields to find us. Just find a path. You can trust a path a lot of times, and because it's being highly used. So that's what we have to do sometimes, is back away and look for the, what is the simple solution to this thing? And I can do that. I can't do the complex thing. I can do the simple thing.
Well, we're running out of time again, Ray. Thank you very much. Tell Johnny thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, Warrior Connection continues forward. Education information, and we'll be back with you again next week. Take care and good evening.